on maynard.com.au. Hey, you! It's
Tim Ferguson and
Maynard here with
Bunga Bunga,
episode 6. Great new theme song we got there, Tim.
Great new theme song. Very happy with the new theme song. Bunga Bunga Island is the place where we decide who stays, who goes, what's hot, what's hotter, what's yellow. I mean, just really, what really is yellow, empirically? We'll answer all of these questions and yours right here on Bunga Bunga.
A lot's happened since the last episode, which we can't talk about for legal reasons. A lot's happened in Tim's life. And again, we can't talk about that for legal reasons. You've been touring everywhere.
Yeah, we've been touring everywhere. Me, Paul McDermott and Paul Livingston have been touring the Doug Anthonycan All-Stars all around Australia, and then we're headed off to the world, and I can't tell you anything about that, partly because I don't remember.
We're, of course, here at the Fru Fru Cafe, as we usually are, trying to shoo away every single patron they have by making far too much noise.
Although the Cafe Fru Fru patrons in Glebe Point Road seem rusted on this morning. And I guess it's very early in the morning. It's only 7 a.m.
And there's a new waitress who seems a bit puzzled by our behaviour.
Yeah, she doesn't really like dancing and the wheelchair spinning tricks that I was doing before. We dance. If we feel it, we dance. And we encourage others to do the same.
Dancing! Everything else is bullshit!
I got myself into the mood for this show by listening to Tartu doing their version of the Smiths song How Soon Is Now, and it's just amazing what two Russian women that can't sing can do.
They can certainly do more than Morrissey. Morrissey, 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 have you ever heard a more wimpy, teary, I'm not coming back on because somebody coughed dolt? Someone says, I'm a big fan of Morrissey, then I will not sleep with them.
You're still holding it against him for the cancelling of that tour when he came to Australia in 1990. He did the one show in Brisbane, got a bit of a cold, and then pissed off.
Also, he got heckled by someone in Brisbane. Everybody gets heckled by someone in Brisbane, but we power on, we don't stop, we soldier on.
Here's our waitress. Hello.
Hi.
Now, what have you got for Tim?
Oh, I'm just wondering whether he wants something to eat.
Could I have one of your muffins, please?
Fortunately, we're out of muffins.
Oh,
could I have one of your cakes?
We do have banana cake.
Well, a banana whatever thing would be great.
Banana cake, toasted and buttered?
Toasted, buttered, yeah, and lightly smeared with friendship.
Oh, okay.
That proves that we are here. A lot of people think it's the blue screen of sound we work with.
A lot of people assume that Maynard and Tim Ferguson would not be allowed into Cafe Fru Fru.
Well, we are outside.
Well, that's true. We are kept outside because everybody, as you can see, is intensely cool. This is Glebe in Sydney, the inner west of the inner west.
Look, we'll get into our segment here, Bunga Bunga Brown Nosing.
Too much!
Where we note that we've actually turned up on other people's podcasts. The No Agenda podcast we have mentioned, they deconstruct the news, but suddenly I heard the name of our show jumping out of one of their recent shows.
Oh, it's bullcrap. This is bullcrap.
It's still bullcrap.
You'll see.
Wait, the Bunga Bunga? It's bullcrap.
The Bunga Bunga.
It's the Bunga Bunga?
Bunga Bunga.
I don't need to know anymore. I'm frightened to death.
Yeah, this you should be.
And they just repeated our name over and over again, so I want to thank the No Agenda Show for the plug.
I suspect they do have an agenda of hands across the ocean. So thanks very much to the No Agenda people.
Thank you for the reach around. Also, I had a listen to the Splitting Cases podcast. They had a discussion on their show recently. I posed to them the question, which is the better movie? Can't Stop the Music, Village People, 1980, or Spice World with the Spice Girls? Of course, from the 90s. Oh, there goes the 4-3-1.
There goes the 4-3-1. I got to go Spice Girls.
Okay.
They've got sporty, scary. They've just got everything.
They have got Roger Moore, I've got to say, doing perhaps one of the most surreal parts of his career.
Leave the pigeons alone.
And they've got irony about irony on top of an irony, which they play straight. I love that in a movie.
They did a Gary Glitter cover without Gary Glitter because the whole thing broke about Gary and they had to remove him from what they'd filmed.
It's like making a movie with a Rolf Harris number. You've just got to change the particulars.
Well, I'm glad you actually mentioned that too. Oh, Splitting Cases too. I mentioned them because they were talking about the golden age of television, starting with the X-Files.
The golden age started because, yeah, not only did people have so much to watch that they didn't know what to watch, but there were more ways of getting it. So, like, while shows like Cheers and, like, MASH, Murphy Brown, see, they're all before golden age because they were shows that could work in, you know,
on 20 minutes.
Yeah, 22 minutes. You could come in and watch a random episode at any point whatsoever and still be able to follow on.
So what year was that roughly?
I'd say early 90s, maybe 93, 94.
No, I'm going to push it to early 2000s is when this golden age of TV started.
Okay.
Twin Peaks?
Yes.
That's definitely a touchstone in the development of TV.
Yep.
X-Files.
Absolutely.
And it was obviously the start of, but it wasn't in the golden age.
Oh, no, like, no. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying that that's really what got us there.
Yeah.
Like, shows that paved the way.
Yeah. Tim, what do you think?
Bollocks. Bollocks. What, that's the golden age of television? Oh, I know why. It's because you're millennials and anything before the X-Files didn't exist. I've got to say the golden age of television was when I was a kid.
Exactly.
You know, the last dregs of I Love Lucy, of Gilligan's Island.
And the gritty realism of I Dream of Jeannie.
Oh, yes, and the violence of the Cisco Kid with his friend, Poncho.
Here's adventure. Romance.
Oh, Pancho!
The Cisco Kid will be back in a moment.
And let's not forget Hogan's Heroes, which we'll cover later in the show.
We certainly will. Mentioning Rolf Harris, as you did then, Kate Bush has a conundrum because on her album Aerial, I believe, Rolf Harris played some didgeridoo and also did some narration. And fans have been calling, if that album gets re-released, that he be mixed out of it or replaced. How do you feel about that, Tim, artistically?
Well, Rolf Harris playing didgeridoo has become an upsetting metaphor. I don't know. What's the point in erasing something? It was what it was, and at the time, it existed as it did. The fact that the artist was not who he thought it was, I don't think is a reason to go erasing anything. It's like book burning. Once it's written, you just got to let it ride and see it for what it was.
And I think something we should see for what it is right now, the bug out bag, which has become the most popular segment on the show, when Tim asks,
what's in the bug out bag?
No, not quite right.
Oh, Maynard, tell me what's in the bug out bag. Oh, what's in Maynard's, what is it? Bug out bag.
Don't expect too much. Programs will neither be very interesting nor very good.
Oh, look at that.
A lot of bread. Sid butted and smeared with a little bit of love. Oh. And friendship, sorry. Friendship and love.
Hey, slow down.
Okay. Yeah, we're really not enough.
You're getting a lot of commitment out of that banana bread there, Tim.
I've got too much love in my life. I can't be going and accepting it from strange waitresses.
Here we go, Tim. This is what's in the bug out bag.
Hogan's Heroes. It's a book by Brenda Scott Royce, behind the scenes at Stalag 13.
It's the kind of show that you've probably seen repeated and stuff. You just kind of washes over you. You kind of go, it's got that daggy theme. But this book covers every single possible angle of the show, including the fact that there were two musical albums released around the show's run, which was 65 to 1970, five-year run. There was an album, Bob Crane, of course, as well as being a well-known radio announcer, he was also a drummer. Bob Crane and orchestra plays some of TV's greatest hits in a funny way.
Wow, he also liked being smacked on the body with a toilet brush by supermodels, but let's not talk about that right now.
Well, that's the thing. I was looking up and the movie Autofocus, which contains that kind of content about Bob Crane and, of course, the way he died, murdered, mainly his fan clubs and other people are saying that he wasn't a depressive person that was obsessed with sex. That, sure, that was part of his personality, but it wasn't his main gig in life, was not that, and it's been overplayed. The movie Autofocus is apparently not reality. It is, in fact, a fictional movie. I think I might have to do an interview with these people that are Bob Crane supporters and want to actually see his name restored.
Well, yeah, I did see that film about his life, and it seemed a little extraordinary. I mean, where did he find the time? His death was a mystery, but the film suggests that it was occurred after years and years of misbehaviour with the wrong people, when there was absolutely no evidence that this was going on. I always found it a bit questionable, so yeah. Go talk to those Bob Crane fans.
How do you feel about Hogan Serious? Because we all know that your favourite comedy of all time is The Golden Girls.
Yeah, I love The Golden Girls. Also, it's the impossible pitch. Imagine going to anybody, even the ABC today, and saying, I want to do a show about four older women. You can just sort of hear the dripping silence. You can hear the Wolverine howl in the background. Oh.
So you're trying to pitch a show in 1965 saying, it's about a bunch of inmates at a German camp, and it's a comedy.
A very tricky sell. And how did they do it, and why did it work? Well, how did they do it was a fairly simple pitch. The idea of Hogan's Heroes was to pitch something that kicked Nazi Germany while it was down, but didn't hit it where everybody would have really liked to have kicked them. So it took place in a prisoner of war camp as opposed to one of their other camps. So it was acceptable. The idea that the Germans were all idiots or was so tyrannical that they were acting stupidly was, they knew, going to be attractive to everybody.
I have a little bit of a grab here from an interview that Bob Crane did on his radio show with Vernard Kempfler, who played Clink, of course. Let's have a bit of a listen to that.
We have with us the commandant of Hogan's Heroes, Vernard Klemperer, who, well, I don't want to say he's a great dramatic actor. Would you say that?
I would say that I'm slightly great.
One of the things about Werner Klemperer's character on Hogan's Heroes is the subtle approach he has to his job as commandant. Very little ego shows through.
Well, you see, it's an acting problem for me, because I personally don't have much of an ego, and the commandant, as you know, is full of ego, so I have to work very hard at it.
You phony.
Why are you laughing?
How long have you been in this country?
Interestingly, if you watch Hogan's Heroes, John Banner, of course, who played Schultz, was always trying to, they were always trying to overact each other whenever Vernard Kempfler and Clink and him, if they're in your scene, one of them is trying to pull focus in the background all the time. Even though they might only have one or two lines, they're continually trying to pull focus from each other.
Those two characters, Clink and Schultz, go to the heart of the dark satire of Hogan's Heroes. If you haven't seen Hogan's Heroes, it's based in Stalag 13, which is a prisoner of war camp during the Second World War. Of course, Hogan and his little rascally mates are hoodwinking the Nazis who have them prisoner. But look at the catchphrase of the show. The one line that was there every week. I know nothing. I see nothing. And you only have to ask yourself why that would be the most hurtful thing that a German could hear, to see exactly how brutal the comedy was in this show. Because what was the problem in Nazi Germany? Everybody was saying, I didn't know. I knew nothing. I thought they were burning mattresses. People were just disappearing. I know nothing. I see nothing is, as far as I know, and I've watched every sitcom that has ever been made, the most ruthless slap from a catchphrase in any sitcom I've ever seen.
Oh, I see nothing. I was not here. I did not even get up this morning.
It ran for 5 years, the show. Vernon Kempfler won an Emmy once or twice for Best Supporting Actor. This book, Behind the Scenes at Stalag 13, it even has, and I'll just show you, Tim, a section called All in a Day's Work, where it gives you the episode numbers where they have repeated the plot on various episodes. The most repeated plot, as they've listed here, is the Germans have a new weapon that will surely win them the war. Hogan's Heroes must destroy it, photograph it, discredit it, or all of the above. This happened in episodes 2, 3, 5, 25, 41, 98, 106, 115, 116, 117, 125, and 157. That was the plot for all of those episodes.
A pattern emerges. I guess that's how the Germans lost.
The second most reused plot is Hogan's heroes must save Klink from being transferred and replaced by a tougher, wiser commandant. That happened in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, a dozen episodes.
Oh, yeah. You've always got the terror of breaking up the family. Even in Stalag 13, you know, nobody wants to break up the family.
And, of course, one of the other ones is that they're expecting someone, a spy or a German or someone through the resistance, and it turns out to be a woman. That was also one of the devices often used.
A woman? A blonde, beautiful woman who beguiles Hogan and blinds him? What? What? Oh, yeah. It was all happening. It was great comedy and was part of the golden age, the new golden age of television.
This book points out inconsistencies in Hogan's Heroes. In some episodes, Hogan knows what the Manhattan Project is, and in other episodes, he doesn't know what it is. Why would someone in a German camp know what the Manhattan Project is, considering it was one of the most secret projects there was? Oh, sure, the Russians knew all about it, but, you know, why would Hogan be let in on it?
And also with Hogan being so busy with a beautiful blonde trader. Very, you know, the guy had a lot of demands on his time.
Particularly when the only door he had to his area was a blanket hung over a clothesline.
Well, that baffles me. Now, people say that, you know, this is the golden age of television that we're experiencing now.
Well, younger people than us say that. And they could be right, Tim.
They could be right, because what's happening is that because television has gone global, what you can actually do as a production company is create a show that only appeals to, say, 2% of the audience. But if you have a possible pool of 2 billion viewers, 2% is a lot of people. I don't know, what is that, 444? That's over 400 people. And so this means you can take risks like Game of Thrones, House of Cards, and, of course, The Sopranos was the show that seemed to kick it all off. Where you can swear, where the violence can be intense, where the politics can be very controversial. This may well be a golden age. Whether that translates to Australian television or not is becoming clear. It doesn't.
It's the street cleaner.
God bless those street cleaners. God, Glebe is just so clean. It's kept clean for all the screenwriters so their laptops don't clog with dust.
We are hoping from an appearance from the independent screenwriter on his motorbike. He was pretty big in the last show, but very silent today, Tim.
Yeah, I think he's hungover after getting rejected yet again by Screen Australia for his film, which was Exit the Darkness. I would have thought Entering the Darkness would at least suggest some sort of story, but Exiting the Darkness, of course, is a very Australian idea.
Has Doug Anthony All-Stars sold out in Perth, like all three shows at the Regal, is it?
Yeah, Doug Anthony All-Stars have been selling out everywhere, and I'm assuming we've sold out in Perth, we've sold out in Brisbane, Wollongong, Sydney, Canberra, even Hobart, where there are no people. Yeah, we've been selling out in their big rooms. So obviously there's some thirst for chummy musical comedy that's like a bit like the music hall of the old days.
What you're saying is that in the Australian psyche, there's a Doug Anthony All-Star-shaped hole that you are filling.
We are ramming ourselves into it. It's remorseless. The shows have been great fun. McDermott and Livingston are two comic geniuses, and once again, I ride slipstream behind them, just basically looking good and being in tune.
The reviews of your triangle playing have been exceptional, Tim.
A lot of people are talking about that, and I put a lot of practice into it. On stage is the only place I practice it, but triangle is a very difficult instrument to make interesting, and I've done my best.
We'll have a banana bread break here and be back in a sec. Why don't we have a listen to Bob Crane playing his drums along to the theme from F Troop?
F Troop! Agarn! We'll be right back.
And we're back after the banana bread break. Bob Crane, can really rattle those drums.
He was the drummer du jour in Stalag 13.
Now it's time to open the crank mail.
Crank mail, crank mail, crank mail.
That still is one of the best themes on Australian radio.
It's musical, it gets across, a lot of kids are whistling that one.
And boy, did we have some crank mail this time for episode 6 of Bunga Bunga. I don't even know where to start with this, but let's start with an all-out failure of social media. And last time we asked the question, it didn't work. This time we asked the question, it didn't work.
The question is, what's the point? What's the point? We asked the whole internet, the world wide web, to come up with some sort of answer. And
look, it's almost a rule that you shouldn't ask a closed question. It is not a closed question. It failed, really. In fact, we only had one good answer, really. In fact, we are going to remove this from the Bunga Bunga syllabus.
Yeah, we're taking it off the syllabus. The answer that I got was from a gentleman who just said, the point is the end of the sword that you stab your enemies with. And I kind of like that, but nothing else came in. People are baffled by this open-ended question. I would have thought love, butterflies, friendship and joy would be the point of doing anything. Nope, sadly no. The internet says silence.
The other question we asked them was a dating question on a dating site there, Tim.
Things you should never say on your dating profile. Everybody's doing dating profiles now, and it really is quite a conundrum.
You should try not to use the word broad-minded. Back in the day when you had to advertise for a flatmate in the newspaper, when they still existed, apparently they don't exist anymore, I put the word broad-minded in thinking, oh, I don't want a Christian. But apparently that's code for swingers talk. So everyone who came said, what's this about the broad-minded thing? And I'd say, oh, I just don't really want a conservative person, that's all. So you've got to know your code.
I did broad-minded once, and I met someone who just wanted to stick the heads of G.I. Joe dolls up my butt. I'm not that broad.
There's nothing wrong with that. The problem is getting them back after you've done that.
Well, and they're worth a lot of money if they're the older collectible ones, and they wanted to use my toys. And I'm not putting my toys anywhere outside of a cryogenic freezer.
Besides, you got pretty uppity about that. You were saying, look, you want to stick the head of G.I. Joe dolls up my bum? They're action figures, I believe you said. Well, who did we get replying to this and what did they say?
Things you should never say on your dating profile. Adam Remington said the police couldn't prove the bodies in the backyard were mine. Yeah, you wouldn't put that on your profile. Jeff Thau said white supremacist with interesting facial tattoos. The hump hole suggested you shouldn't say needs some work, and I guess a hump hole doesn't need work. Catherine de Medici, I'm looking for someone with a large drug or alcohol problem, so mine seems normal in comparison. Tim Brady said, I'm bipolar curious. Carolyn Crawdon said, the doctor told me it's not contagious. Jody Sutcliffe suggested, I was arrested, but I wasn't convicted. Yeah, nobody, that's not going to get any dates. Mark O'Brien said not to call yourself light-fingered Louie.
Hang on, here goes the street cleaner again. You're going to be able to see your face in the road of Glebe.
Comrades, comrades, da-da-da, and there he goes.
I think part of the reason we didn't get a good response to What's the Point is that you put Frederick the Dancing Dog on our Facebook page. Now, that's just going to distract people.
People were wondering, what's the dancing dog got to do with it? But the dancing dog is a diversion.
Back to the dating profile.
Yeah, don't put this on your dating profile, says Denise McAvaney. Don't say, I will be available for dating next month after my prostate operation. Yeah, it's a bit of a downer. It does make you think, will I? Julie Hughes says, don't say, I have a lot of cats. Very true. Justine Lynch suggested never say, I get out of prison in 2 months. Karen Davenport said, don't say, I am a unique snowflake. Yeah, that immediately says,
and you can see the monkey banging the tambourine together, can't you?
Yeah, yeah. CJ Cross said, don't say you're the world zit-squeezing champion of 1984. Everybody knows that 83 was the golden year of that.
That's true.
Kirsty Shields says, don't say, do you have a Humphrey B. Bear suit? Kind of a turn-off. Lindley Kissick says, never say I haven't been on a date for 4 years. Or maybe she was just saying that. And Stephanie Mystery said, whatever you do, don't say hi, future daddy.
Of course, on the Bunga Bunga page as well, we do, whoop, there goes the 431 into town. People going in there to look for one of those 40 jobs they're looking for this month.
Comrades, comrades, just singing to the bus driver there.
Now, we also had a comparison of our fridges. I opened the fridge door on my fridge and on your fridge, took a photo and compared them together there. And I've got to say, neither of us has come off particularly well, Tim.
No, I think people weren't actually looking at our fridges for what they really are, which is food containers.
You can obviously tell that mine, there's no woman in the house, and it's a single guy. You can tell that.
Yeah, and you kind of can, because there's no actual food in there, and the stuff that is in there is stuff like muesli kept in the fridge, which is, it's a very man thing.
Well, I explained that because all through my life I've lived in inner-city Sydney flats that has a cockroach problem, so the one way to stop them getting to anything is put them in the fridge. In fact, I remember there was one flat I actually had to sleep in the fridge.
On those hot summer days, you've got to sleep somewhere. I got ridiculed for having little more than mustard and cheap vodka. But, you know, if the apocalypse happens, what are you going to take?
Yeah. Whose house are you going to go to?
Exactly. You come to my place. Come for the flavour.
I'd also like to point out that my fridge is a product of 1987 Yugoslavian technology. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if the factory that my fridge was made in was bombed by the Americans.
Bombed out of mercy.
But it's still going.
Oh, yeah, still going, still chug-a-lugging. It's no Chernobyl, your fridge, that's for sure.
Oh, look, a lot of people are also criticising my fridge for having an open can of chickpeas in it and your fridge for having Glad Wrap-covered stock pots. And they want to know why neither of us use Tupperware.
Go tup yourself. I mean, really, Tupperware? Don't you know what Tupperware is made of? Oh, yeah, plastic. So you'd rather use a lot more plastic to protect your food as opposed to yards and yards and yards of much thinner plastic.
Think of the planet.
I'm thinking of the planet right now.
You brought up the issue of fat suits. This issue was brought up. Where do you stand on this? I've got to say, I don't think I've ever worn one or had an interest in, you know, of course, I'm down with the onesie. I mean, who isn't? I've worn a sumo wrestling suit on the Ray Martin show, which you can have a look on my YouTube channel. That's a lot of fun. But that's as far as it goes with me in fat suits.
Well, the question was posed by Mama Duck to Bunga Bunga. And as she said, are fat suits funny, or do they alienate comedy audiences of the curvy type? All I can say is Michael Myers, fat bastard in the Austin Powers movies, was a very funny character. I never heard...
He drank poo.
That's true, he drank poo, and I never heard anybody of any size complaining that it was anything but silly. So I wouldn't go losing too much sleep about that. More fat suits. Maybe not nude suits. And certainly cosplay's time came and it went. But maybe now is the fat suit party era.
Get on over to the Bunga Bunga Facebook page. It is spelt the way you sound it. Bunga Bunga. Get on over there and get in the conversation and have a look at both our fridges.
Lindley asks, serious question. How hot is Peter Capaldi, the new Doctor Who?
I woke up at 4 a.m. in the morning and watched the show. Probably not the best way to absorb the first episode of a new Doctor, and I didn't get into it. I didn't think it was bad, but I've had a problem with Doctor Who ever since the episode Let's Kill Hitler, which did nothing of the sort and set up a story arc I wasn't all that particularly interested in. Also, any episode with River Phoenix in it. What's the name? River Bum... River... the Hunter River... What is it?
I think it's the River Yangtze.
Yeah, well, whatever her name is, she put me off the whole thing as well. So I have had a problem with Doctor Who for a while, although I am down with the fizz.
Yeah, I think Peter Capaldi, I mean, you know, he's a great actor, but I was watching Doctor Who saying, you know, when's he going to swear like a trooper? I want to see him swearing. That's when he does his best acting. I want to see just the most foul-mouthed Doctor Who that was ever born, but he doesn't swear at all.
He's got a bit of an edge, a bit of a nastiness to him, going back to a bit of an Eggleston thing.
I think so, yeah. Going back, he's not being a Tom Baker. He's not being a Sylvester McCoy. He's not being a Colin Baker. He's got to play the nasty because that's what he's famous for, the abrupt Cleese-type actor. But again, I want to see more swearing from Doctor Who.
Lots been made of the fact that he's an older Doctor coming on the heels of a very young Doctor.
I think it's worth broadening the audience. in terms of the ages. You get, you know, the young spunky person saying, "Doctor, but doctor, oh, shall I kill him, doctor?" It's good to have those. And an older doctor, didn't hurt for John Pertwee.
And 10 points to Rage, who just before they played the new Doctor Who episode, they played Doctor in the TARDIS by the Time Lords. Well done. Good placement.
Go Rage. Go Rage. I asked many times to become a guest DJ for Rage.
And are you saying that Doug Anthony All-Stars never hosted Rage?
Doug Anthony All-Stars certainly did it, because all we wanted to play was polka tunes.
I hosted Rage twice, Tim. How come I managed to host Rage twice and you've never done it?
I don't know.
You're much smarter than me and you know music better.
Maybe they just thought that playing, you know, 30 polka tunes overnight was not going to attract people. We at least said to them, look, at least everyone's going to talk about it. And then Richard really screwed it up by saying, we'll throw in a couple of Morrissey numbers, and nobody was ever going to listen to that.
We all know the best Rage hosting ever was Tism.
Let's appreciate the art of Kerry O'Brien and his late line theme. Kerry, I really, really like that, you know. Now, there's a lot of modern stuff also that we really like, and
Satisfaction by the Stones? No. Didn't move me. My Generation, The Who? No, no. We Want the World and We Want It Now? No, we didn't really agree with that. None of those things really had any bearing on us. There was one singular moment, I think, that was the thing which created Tism, and here it is, the Four Corners theme.
Tism just gave Rage, for just a split second, credibility.
One of the scenes I actually hosted, I was in the shower and I was sniffing exit mould, and they said, oh, look, we can't really use that. We'll move that to the 4 a.m. slot. So, yes, we will put it on, but they moved it to 4 a.m. I wonder if that's out there anywhere. They never repeat that one, oddly enough.
You know, Rage is, it's good. They play new clips, I guess. They play a bit of new music, but it is a television show run by a committee of people who wear rectangle spectacles.
I was pretty shocked because I was talking to some kids from Jesmond High in Newcastle about 2-3 years ago, and I mentioned Rage, and they did not know what it was, Tim. This is high school students did not know what Rage was. That is how powerful YouTube's just wiped the face of music video.
Yeah, you'd think that at least know the term Ongoing Fury or, you know, Rage Against the Parents, but no. But one thing I do love about Rage is that they've kept the original video... Rage thing, which has gone through being retro, back to being cool.
Tim, I think we'll take a music break here, and I know you've always been a big fan of Elvis impersonators from the Eastern Bloc.
Big fan, big fan. I am a hunker burning fan for those guys.
Got a hip-hop group called Ghetto People doing their version of the Elvis song In the Ghetto with Bulgaria's premier Elvis impersonator, I think LV or something like that. This is piss funny. And also at the end of it, you're going to be going, In the Ghetto, hey, you are going to be doing that, Tim. So let's get into that. And when we come back, I think it's time for us to get into a little bit of history and politics with Tim Ferguson.
You bet. But if you get funny up in my mirror, I'll pull my gun and do something to you.
Here we go. As the snow flies on a cold and gray Chicago morning, a poor little baby child is born in the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
And his mama cries, 'cause if there's one thing that she don't need, it's another hungry mouth to feed in the ghetto.
In the ghetto.
People, don't you understand? The child needs a helping hand. He'll grow to be an angry young man someday.
Here we go.
Take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see? Do we simply turn our heads and look the other way? Well, the world turns.
And the world turns.
and a hung a little boy with a running nose, plays in the street as a cold wind blows in the ghetto.
In the ghetto, in the ghetto, in the ghetto,
and his hunger burns. So he starts to roam the streets at night, and he learns how to steal, and he learns how to fight in the ghetto.
In the ghetto, in the ghetto, in the ghetto.
Then one night in desperation, the young man breaks away. He buys a gun, he steals a car, tries to run, but he don't get far. And his mama cries. As a crowd gathers round, an angry young man face down in the street with a gun in his hand in the ghetto.
In the ghetto, in the ghetto, in the ghetto.
And as her young man dies, on a cold and gray Chicago morning, another little baby child is born in the ghetto.
In the ghetto, in the ghetto, in the ghetto.
People, don't you understand? The child needs a helping hand. He'll grow to be an angry young man someday.
Here we go, here we go.
Take a look at you and me. Are we too blind to see? Do we simply turn our heads and look the other way?
Oh, change
of anything.
Can we get fucking?
And his mama cries.
And his mama cries.
On a cold and gray Chicago morning, another little baby child is born in the ghetto.
In the ghetto, in the ghetto, in the ghetto.
And his mama
cries.
Oh, how she cries.
What you gonna do down in the ghetto?
Banana bread man. Hello, sir. We enjoyed your banana bread.
Oh, that's great. Fantastic. I'm glad you did.
Yes, it's Mama Kaz Banana Breads. Telephone 9516-0663. 9516-0663. Mama Kaz, really tasty banana bread.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for that.
I think we've almost got our first sponsor, non-paying sponsor, but, you know, it's only our podcast, sir. This is going out to as many as seven people.
Are you serious?
It's great that he parked his car there as a giant cue card for you, his van.
Yes, it saved a lot of having to, you know, think.
On this day, on this very day we're recording this, and hello to all the people in the future, they actually found the wreckage of the Titanic in 1985. Which is a bit cruel on the people who would have been in the lifeboat. Also on this day in 1982, the US Space Command was founded, Tim. But what do you reckon they're up to?
I think they are looking really for aliens. They want to make sure that there are no illegal aliens out there who are trying to come to Earth.
Tim, I believe you're involved in this. The signing of the ANZUS Treaty, the America, New Zealand and Australia Treaty in 1951. How's that gone, Tim?
The treaty's been okay because no one's ever had to enact the treaty. Thank you, sir.
You've become the banana bread king of Glebe, Tim.
I have. I've just been offered free banana bread for the rest of my life. And there you go. That'll help me in the lean years to come.
The ANZUS Treaty, I know you were behind that. I know that you threw a lot of your weight behind that into the 80s. But are you still behind the ANZUS Treaty, or you think we need another acronym?
Obviously, New Zealand hasn't been carrying its weight because they don't have an army, they don't have a navy, and they don't have an air force. So the answer is...
They've got some fantastic surveillance aircraft.
Oh, they certainly do. Mostly they're used for crop dusting, but they do some really good stuff with surveillance. The main thing with ANZUS...
Sorry, the banana bread guy is really excited. Like he obviously doesn't know how few listeners we have, Tim.
He doesn't know. He's got no idea. He thinks that he's now famous, thanks to you, dear listener. The ANZUS Treaty really just means that if anybody is distressed, whether it's America, New Zealand or Australia, the other two teams have to pick up the phone when we call. And that's it. No promises made. They just have to answer our call of distress.
And also, they don't say who has to pick up the phone. It could be Michelle Obama that goes, oh, hang on, I'll just get him, and then she'll make the... No, he's just in the drive backing the car out. He can't come.
Or one of the Obama daughters, or their dog.
And speaking of telephones, on this day in 1878 was a huge day for Emma Nutt. In fact, as well as Lorne Greene, we'd like to dedicate this show to Emma Nutt. That was the name of the first female telephone operator hired by Alexander Graham Bell in 1878. Emma Nutt, we salute you.
We salute you, Emma Nutt. God bless you, and thanks for answering that phone, which I presume never rang because there was only one telephone in the world.
Bit of a dud job. Just wait there until it rings and away you go.
Well, you chew the gum, smoke the cigarettes and look good.
Probably having a few drinks of laudanum while I'm at it as well.
Oh, yeah, they would have loved that stuff.
And Tim, you've been looking at a few issues there which you think need raising on Bunga Bunga. What do you want to bring into our collective consciousness?
Well, there are a couple of things that have been going on. One was the recent World Congress of Families.
You were a keynote speaker?
I was down as being a keynote speaker, but then, just like Kevin Andrews and Corey Bernardi, I thought at the last minute, I don't think I can hang around these people. I mean, the Congress's managing director and an ardent supporter of Russia's anti-gay laws said that 90% of poverty can be solved simply through marriage. And I thought that that was right, because alimony does work. If you want to make someone broke, you just marry them. You just marry the hell out of them. So he does have a point. What happened was, I think even Kevin and Corey realised that this Congress of Families was nothing of the sort. There was a keynote speaker who was there to say that abortion causes cancer, which is, you might as well say that getting your toenails clipped will cause your head to fall off. Such bunkum, but of course treated seriously. And treated seriously by Kevin Andrews, our Minister for Disability, as well as, you know, bad haircuts, and Corey Bernardi, the man who thinks that gay marriage will lead to bestial marriage. What's wrong with that, I ask? These guys thought this would be okay. Kevin was down to open the Congress. But then, tragically, sadly, somebody pointed out that this pack of dingbats doesn't represent anybody. 200 people attended this World Congress of Families. That is 0.00001% of Australia. That is 1/3.5 millionth of the world population. They're probably overblowing their weight there. And of course, Kevin and Corey didn't come to our Bunga Bunga Congress party yesterday either.
No, they didn't. And it's nothing like Berlusconi's Bunga Bunga parties either. It's just me and Tim in a moo-moo watching some John Pertwee Doctor Who episodes.
Oh, yeah, which was pretty good. I mean,
there was one about the spider. There was a spider on the people's back. That was great.
Oh, yeah, and those slug things. I mean, they're really quite terrifying if you look at them twice.
And the beanbag that ate the person. That's also a very scary episode as well.
Another thing that was worrying me was the Festival of Dangerous Ideas that thankfully has passed without any incident. John Hewson was probably the most exciting speaker.
Was Barry Unsworth not available?
Yeah, I mean, and also they couldn't get a hold of a car alarm. But John Hewson was talking about how climate change and the responses to climate change are very uncertain. It's hardly a dangerous idea. The other people who were interesting in the Festival of Dangerous Ideas were Pussy Riot. Pussy Riot, you know, those women who were locked up by Putin, and good on them for singing in a church.
And they were away for a while, 22 months.
22 months, which in Russia is actually 23 months, because there's a law about counting. They came out and they were speaking, but the first question they had to answer was why their message about Putin being a bad man was more important than not speaking, because the festival is convened at the St. James Ethics Centre, which, according to the Guardian newspaper, has links to Operation Sovereign Borders. You'll remember Operation Sovereign Borders as being the brainchild of Tony Abbott and Scott Morrison to protect Australia from we're not sure what.
Because you're not allowed to talk about it.
Well, exactly. I mean, what's the Russian word for oops? Is it oopski? Thanks to the Festival of Dangerous Ideas, Pussy Riot has been downgraded as a name to Pussy Mild-Mannered Left-Wing Middle-Class Ruckus.
And you have come up with a Bunga Bunga idea where we can actually work with one of our strongest critics.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who's been busting our chops every episode. Fly Opine Monkey on Twitter. He's been relentlessly cruel about the show, but, you know, in a relentlessly cruel, heartwarming way. And it's kind of been enjoyable. I mean, I enjoy his criticism.
Oh, yeah. Sir Daryl Adams, the Fly Opine Monkey, is great on Twitter, has come up with a brilliant idea, an answer to the Festival of Dangerous Ideas.
Hang on. There's the... They're all the people on the way to the Festival of Dangerous Ideas.
Comrades. We are, with Sir Daryl, going to convene the Festival of Dumb Ideas.
The Festival of Dumb Ideas. Is any idea where we're going to hold this, who we're going to play it to, what is the venue and what the first speaker is? Is Barry Unsworth available?
Is Barry Unsworth available? We're going to hold it at Sydney Town Hall. We will have not only Barry Unsworth, but Dr. Carl will be part of the team. And we'll get ourselves to talk. I'd like to get Fiona O'Loughlin to talk about some of her more radical parenting ideas. And I think we'll just be reaching out to all those people who have seen that the Festival of Dangerous Ideas is about as dangerous as a Festival of Dumb Ideas. Which is where we're going to go first.
So should the people know that their ideas are dumb, or are we looking for a festival of put-your-foot-in-your-mouth ideas, really? What are we going for here?
Well, certainly we'll be looking for incompetent speakers. Talent range from Australia's Got Ideas talent.
I think we should get Reese Nicholson in on this, the Novocastrian comic, who claims that the only reason that they discovered coal in Newcastle is because everyone was smoking so much ice that they were just digging a random hole in their backyard and they hit some.
Well, that's good, and that's a dumb idea. That's great, Reese. That's why he's one of my favourite comedians in the entire world. If you don't know Reese Nicholson, what is wrong with you? We need more dumb ideas, so we're doing a call out now to go to the Bunga Bunga page and suggest your dumb idea for our upcoming Festival of Dumb Ideas.
And it really just has to be one line, really, one question to get it going there, and we will be in on it. Does that mean I have to come up with another award-winning theme like I did for Crank Mail?
We certainly need a theme, something grand yet understated, something colourful yet sedate.
We haven't called for a sound effect solo yet, Tim. What do you want this week?
This week, I would like to hear the sound of a young liberal's face being slapped very hard by a hunted fox.
All right, folks, here we go.
Wow. Tim, we're going to be having a random CD pick from you. Or do you want to go with the Tattoo, the Russian girls doing the How Soon Is Now? They were sort of Pussy Riot before there was Pussy Riot.
Yeah, the Tattoo girls really, they deserve to be given a hearing.
Because they were almost booted off Eurovision when they represented Russia. There was a rumour they were going to kiss, and if they kissed, well, they were just going to be disqualified. The whole show was going to be closed down. Big black curtain was going to be just dropped on everybody and the audience. But now everyone kisses on Eurovision. In fact, we kiss in between all the time on the show.
We always do. That's why we go through all these napkins. It's worth noting that the ladies from Tartu have never once had any of their singles ever played on ABC's Rage. What's going on there? I'm pretty sure they're banned by the people with rectangle spectacles from Rage. It's not okay to play tracks like this one.
It's time for Tim Ferguson's Right of Reply. Tim?
The right of reply this week is to say that making Jerry Lewis an honorary Order of Australia member is a great idea. American comedian and actor Jerry Lewis has become an honorary member of the Order of Australia for his services to charity. In particular, over the many years he's been doing it, he's raised over $2.6 billion for muscular dystrophy research. And that's a huge amount of money for one man to generate. When he accepted the award, Jerry said that he was thrilled. He said, it's a very big thrill. It's an honour. Australia is a country I love next to mine. Obviously, we're not next to his, but we understand.
Comedy is his thing, not geography.
That's right, yeah, that's his thing. And cane tricks. I've seen Jerry do cane tricks at a private party once, and he's awesome. He's got a talent.
Is this going to lead to other comics getting it? When is this same award going to be given to Carrot Top? Where is the respect for the prop comics?
That's right. Where is their respect? Comedians obviously can raise more money for charities than any other artist simply because, you know, you put a smile on people's dial at a fundraising event and their hands will reach for their wallets. Or is it their guns? But good on you, Jerry. Good on you. That's my right-off reply.
Finish off with some Tartu, which in fact is a contraction of the Russian me for you and you for me or something like that.
Something like that. Thank you so much for listening to Bunga Bunga. We care about you. We love you. And we know who you are because you send us messages.
Yeah, and continue to do so. And we're very disappointed that the Glebe independent filmmaker has not turned up on his motorbike at all. We can only assume the grant has fallen through and he's run out of kerosene.
Yeah, without government money, how's he going to eat? That's what I worry about. And how's he going to type and power his laptop or his mobile phone or all his other devices?
Check out all the other shows at maynard.com.au. I'm maynardcomow, which is just maynard.com.au with the dots taken out on Twitter. Tim, you are?
At with Tim Ferguson. W-I-T-H, Tim Ferguson. Get on it. Do it now. Feel yourself.
We've got the Bunga Bunga page on Facebook. Come in there and stir the pot. So it's hooray from me.
And hooray from him.
Bunga Bunga. Bunga.
All the shyness that is criminally vulgar. I'm the sun and air of nothing in particular. You shut your mouth. I'm the sun and the air. All the shyness that is criminally vulgar. I'm the sun and air of nothing in particular. There's a club if you'd like to go. You could meet somebody who really loves you. So you go and you stand on your own. And you live on your own. And you go home and you cry and you want to die. What is it gonna happen now? When exactly do you mean? See, I've already waited too long. And now my hope is gone. You shut your mouth.
On maynard.com.au. Hey, you!